morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Monday, October 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda police say a Sunday bomb blast in the capital, Kampala, was the work of terrorists.
Our joint task teams of experts from counterterrorism, intelligence, and investigations have confirmed the incident was an intentional act of domestic terror.
Aid agencies in Somalia's Uguri Seal District suspend operations due to fighting. The U.S. and Zimbabwe continue cooperation to improve health services to Zimbabweans. Sierra Leone's gender minister will join us to discuss the country's gender parity bill introduced in parliament. And Eswatini political parties and civil society reject King Mswati's call for dialogue amid protest.
We can't go to a venue which is a predetermined outcome, and we've got no control on the agenda of the meeting. The environment, in our view, at Dubai, is hostile to the pro-democracy voice of the country.
And Benin legalizes abortion across the board. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A bomb blast at a bar has killed at least one person and wounded seven others in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. President Yoweri Museveni says the incident appears to be an act of terrorism. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
President Museveni made his comments Sunday in a series of tweets pledging to bring the perpetrators to justice. His remarks come hours after Saturday's explosion ripped through the Digida bar, which was crowded with people eating and drinking. Naweiso Jemima is a waitress at the bar. She says, "We thought there were gunshots, considering the fact that this bar had been talked about in the news." She also says, "We were shocked to see all the chairs had burned. Beer bottles were broken. I turned to see a colleague's back had been torn to pieces. Another had his hand and feet torn off." Police spokesperson Fred Enanga says their joint task force team also categorized the incident as an act of terrorism.
Three men, disguised as customers, arrived at the eating point at around 8:30 p.m. And amongst these three, one of them was carrying a polythene bag containing unknown items that he placed under the table where they sat. They disappeared afterwards, abandoning their package at the scene.
Enanga says the explosion covered a radius of 5 square meters, suggesting an improvised explosive device was used.
Our joint team of bomb experts has established that the explosion was out of a crude device, which was assembled using local materials of nails, other metallic fragments.
There has been no claim of responsibility. Earlier this month, Britain issued an alert in which it warned that terrorists were planning attacks in the African nation. But Ugandan police say at this point, there is no link between the Saturday night incident and the warnings. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, known as OCHA, says aid agencies in the Guri Seal district of Somalia have suspended operations because most of the residents there have fled the town. OCHA says there is a need for urgent food, shelter, water, and sanitation, and protection assistance for the affected people. There was fighting over the weekend in the Somali state of Galmudug between the Somali National Army and the Alusunawal Jamaa. Abdi Malik Abdullahi is a Somali analyst from Mogadishu. He tells me that besides the humanitarian concerns, the fighting is jeopardizing the overall campaign against Al-Shabaab.
Yeah, in the past week or so, particularly the last 2 days, there have been intensified fighting between government force led by Gagmuzuk Security Force together with the SNA and the Danab Commando, trained by the U.S. on one side and the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'a forces on the other end in Gureel town, which is around 65 kilometers south of Dusamareb. At least 20 soldiers were killed from both sides. As per the official figures, almost more than 50 were injured from both camps. Many of the people from the town have also fled, and there is a huge displacement. And as we speak now, both sides are claiming that they are still in the town.
Why is the federal government forces, why are they fighting this group?
I think it has something to do with what happened in the past. The current Gelmudu administration came into being in February 2020. And it didn't just come up. It came up after a serious fight between Gelmudu and government force with the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jamaa, who were initially controlling this region. So after almost 2 years, the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jamaa group regrouped and, sort of mobilized their supporters and managed to capture Gure'el town, where the fighting is currently ongoing. That was early this month. In the past few weeks, the Gelmudu security forces, aided by the government forces, were also mobilizing and sort of preparing for this offensive. So it basically comes down to who controls what. In the meantime, the common enemy seems to have been forgotten.
That is exactly what I wanted to ask you. You said the common enemy. What does this mean for the fight against Al-Shabaab, which poses the most threat to the Somali state?
It means that particularly security priorities have been neglected and downgraded, in the sense that all this, army and artillery and weapons ought to be, to have been, used against the Al-Shabaab, which is against the existence of force camps. But that's not what's happening at the moment. So it's a failure in leadership in this region and in Somalia as a whole.
Abdi Malik, thank you so much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Welcome, James. It's been nice to talk to you as well.
That was Somali analyst Abdi Malik Abdullahi speaking with us from the capital, Mogadishu. The U.S. Embassy in Zimbabwe says joint effort by the two governments to improve health services to citizens are going well, despite what many observers say are often strained relations between Washington and Harare. Rutendo Mawere reports from the Zimbabwean capital.
The acting U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, Thomas Hastings, recently commented on the successful collaboration between the two governments during a recent tour of the Rujeko Clinic in Harare's Tsvarasekwa suburb. The center is one of several health institutions supported by the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. Ambassador Hastings told the press that the U.S. is working to provide much-needed assistance to the country's health sector.
Yes, I'm happy to say that although the U.S. government and the government of Zimbabwe have some differences, those differences really do not get in the way of the health assistance that we provide. There's been tremendous stability from my government in support for PEPFAR and the fight against HIV/AIDS. The program is in its fourth president now. Under President Bush, President Obama, President Trump, and President Biden, we've continued to support PEPFAR and continue to support interventions in Zimbabwe.
Yes, Tim said various funds provided by the United States have helped Zimbabwe prevail in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
And the fact is, the fight against HIV and AIDS has been a real success in Zimbabwe over the 18 years of PEPFAR and even before that, other forms of support.
Harare City Health is the city council's department that oversees all local clinics providing primary health care to Harare residents. Speaking on behalf of the Director of Health, the city's epidemiologist, Dr. Michael Vere, says the U.S. PEPFAR program has helped address some of the challenges facing Zimbabwe's health sector.
The project is a very noble project for the city of Harare. It is a project that has had a profound impact in terms of some of the indicators that we track, especially with regard to HIV. With regard to cancer screening, for example, with HIV, the minimum required is 79%, and we've been able to surpass that treatment of cervical cancer lesions.
Vera acknowledges that poor salaries for health workers have led to a shortage of health workers in the city council. But he says PEPFAR has helped address this challenge. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 25th. In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, representatives of civil society organizations, political parties, and concerned citizens have rejected a call for dialogue by King Mswati III through Sibaya, a people's parliament. The Southern African Development Community, NUASADC, had recommended such dialogue, but the Multi-Stakeholders Forum says Sibaya is not an appropriate venue for an inclusive dialogue and has no significant value in shaping the destiny of Eswatini. Tulani Maseko is chairperson of the Multi-Stakeholders Forum.
We reject Sibaya as a platform for engagement and dialogue in Swaziland. In our view, Sibaya has completely failed over the years to respond to the call for engagement and democracy in Swaziland. Sibaya is a window dressing exercise. We have no control on how it is managed. We have no control on the chairmanship. So we can't go to a venue which is a predetermined outcome, and we've got no control on the agenda of the meetings. The environment, in our view, at Sibaya is hostile to the pro-democracy voices of this country.
But the Eswatini Constitution says that the people, through Sibaya, constitute the highest policy and advisory council of the country.
You would have noted that in our five-point plan, we are calling for a new democratic constitution. The essence of that is that we cannot continue to pretend as if what currently exists as a supreme law is of any help to us. We are in this crisis fundamentally because this very constitution was crafted with the intention to entrench an undemocratic oppressive system. We cannot therefore be subjected to an oppressive document. Number two, the king cannot pretend to follow the constitution when he himself is the number one culprit to undermine and disrespect this very constitution. So he cannot pick and choose when to comply with it and when not to comply with it. We're demanding a process where we shall go into the forum as equal partners into the discussion, not the words where he's subject. That must come to an end. We reject this thing with the contempt that it deserves.
But the king's appealing for calm. He says that there can be no dialogue while there is violence going on in the country.
The question is, who's perpetuating violence? We're not the ones who are killing people. We're not the ones who are maiming and breaking the bones of the Swazi people. We're not the ones who go in the middle of the night, house to house, to brutalize and torture young children for standing up and demand democracy. If we need to create an round of camp, it is for the king and government to ensure that the environment exists, not for us.
So what do you want in terms of how this process can come to an end? Because there has to be some dialogue.
We are the ones who've been calling for dialogue for the last 30, 40 years. We cannot now refuse to dialogue. But the terms and conditions of engagement cannot be set upon us by the king. We don't want to dialogue with the king as a person. What we are calling for is the king to ensure that its government has the capacity and the mandate to engage with the pro-democracy movement.
Mr. Maseko, thank you so much. It's always very nice to talk with you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Tulani Maseko is the chairperson of the Multi-Stakeholders Forum of Eswatini. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. Sierra Leone's Minister of Gender, Mati Tarawale, says in today's patriarchal world, gender inequality is not unique to Sierra Leone, nor is it an African phenomenon. She says gender disparity in Sierra Leone is exhibited in the form of domestic and sexual violence, high teenage pregnancy, and high school dropout by girls, and lack of political representation. But Tarawale says President Julius Mada Bio has made good on his 2018 campaign promise to increase female representation in politics. Last week, Tarawale presented to Parliament a bill calling for 30% representation of women in Parliament.
The bill has four key provisions. Provision one speaks to a minimum of 30% elective positions for either gender, male and female. Provision two speaks to a minimum of 30% of appointive positions of either gender, and by appointive positions we mean ministers, heads of parastatals, ambassadors, board members, and that sort of thing. Provision three talks about access to finance. The bill gives the authority to the Ministry of Finance and the Bank of Sierra Leone to engage financial institutions and develop a new sort of methodology or new ideal system on how to increase finance to women. The fourth provision is what I call gender mainstreaming or some sort of gender mainstreaming, because it speaks to equal pay between male and female for equal work of equal value. And it also speaks to institutions, be it private or government, to have a minimum of 30% females or women within their employment.
What would you say is the level of female participation right now in the Sierra Leone Parliament?
The current parliament constitutes 12% women, and that is unacceptable, particularly where you have 52% of the population being women.
What about President Madabio's own cabinet? What's the level of female participation in President Madabio's cabinet?
On appointive positions, currently for women, you're talking cabinet positions, you're talking heads of parastatals, you're talking deputy ministers. We're averaging 21-22%. So even though that's higher than the elective sort of positions, it's still below, you know, the minimum 30 that women are asking for.
Why do you think, Madam Minister, that women have had a difficult time in terms of representation, and how do you think this can be alleviated?
The world is patriarchal, and gender inequality is not a Sierra Leonean phenomenon, nor it is an African phenomenon. It is a global one, and the inequality is manifested in different ways depending on where you live. In Sierra Leone, we see it in the form of sexual violence, we see it in domestic violence, we see it in high teenage pregnancies, we see it in high dropout of girls in school. And addressing the issue requires a multitude of initiatives. And one of them is the bill. And what the bill will do is address the economic and the political disadvantages that women face and redirect that so that we have more women participating politically and more women being involved in the governance space.
Nanti Tarawale, Sierra Leone's Minister of Gender, she was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Benin's parliament voted last week to legalize abortion across the board. Previously, abortion was permitted if the pregnancy posed a threat to the life of the mother or was the result of rape or incest. Now, the new law allows abortion within the first 3 months of pregnancy if it would aggravate or cause material, educational, professional, or moral distress incompatible with the woman or the unborn child's interest. Andre Dossa is editor-in-chief of Channel 3 TV in the Benin capital, Cotonou.
It should be remembered that this law already existed since 2003. But it did not really make it possible to fight against clandestine abortion, which are a real social problem in our country. In Benin, more than 200 women die each year as a result of clandestine abortion. First, the government decided to strengthen the law. Now, with this new law, abortion is legalized. Women can legally abort without taboos in adequate health centers.
How prevalent is abortion in Benin? In other words, what do you think motivated the members of parliament to vote in favor of abortion?
As I told you, abortion is a real social scourge. Many women come down to us because of illegal abortion. According to the Minister of Health, more than 200 women die each year from abortions. Many young girls drop out of school because of this phenomenon. This is what really motivated the parliament member to vote this law.
I'm sure there are some people in Benin who are opposed to legalizing abortion. What are their arguments?
Obviously, this law provokes a lot of reactions. Many citizens are opposed to this law. all religions have expressed their concerns. Benin is a country where traditional religions are well established. People are very torn from moral values and think that abortion is a bad practice. The Catholic Church has also made a statement asking Parliament members not to pass this law. The President of Parliament also openly opposed.
So, Andre, what's next for Benin? Is there any debate in Parliament about gay rights in Benin?
I fear that the question of homosexuality cannot pass so easily. The vast majority of Beninese society is still hostile to LGBT people. People remain very conservative on this issue and certainly will not accept it.
Andre Dossa is the editor-in-chief of Channel 3 television in the Benin capital, Cotonou. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Valencia Marathon, where Ethiopia's Lesinsbet Gide smashed the women's half marathon world record on Sunday, finishing in 1 hour, 2 minutes and 52 seconds. The 23-year-old Gide, who is also the world 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters record holder, shaved more than a minute off the previous half marathon mark of 1 hour, 4 minutes, 2 seconds, set by Kenya's Ruth Chepngetich this year. In the men's race, Kenya's Abel Kipchumba made a late charge to win in 58 minutes, 0.7 seconds, moving him to sixth on the world all-time list. Fellow Kenyans Ronet Kipruto was second and Daniel Matieko was third as the top seven men finished the World Athletics Elite Label Road Race inside 59 minutes. Staying with athletics, Olympic running greats came together on Saturday to bid farewell to rising Kenyan star Agnes Tirop, whose mother earlier this month sent shockwaves across the nation and the athletics world. A double world championships bronze medalist tipped for future stardom on the track, Tirop was buried in a white casket in central Kenya on what will have been her 26th birthday. Perez Chepchichir, Olympic marathon champion, and Amos Kipruto, men's marathon bronze medalist, paid glowing tribute to the slain long-distance Olympic runner.
It's a bad moment to us. And Agnes Tirov is our champion. It was so sad to me.
I remember Agnes in 2019 when we were in World Championship, because Agnes got a bronze medalist in 10,000 and I got a bronze medalist in marathon. It's really painful.
At the burial of Tirov, Athletics Kenya President Jackson Tuwei unveiled plans to honor Tirov.
We are going to honor our athlete, Agnes Tirov, by giving her the name of Agnes Tirov Memorial Cross-Country Tour in Eldoret.
Tirov's body was found on October 13th with stab wounds in the bedroom of her home in Etien, a high-altitude training hub for top-class athletes. And out of football news, COSAFA Women's Championship winners Tanzania have been eliminated by Namibia from the Total Energies Women's African Cup of Nations Morocco 2022 qualifier after a 3-2 defeat on Saturday. The Twiga Stars were smartened from a 2-1 loss suffered no thanks to Zenetha Coleman's brace at the National Stadium Dar es Salaam 3 days ago. Elsewhere in Ghana, the Super Falcons of Nigeria made it through to the second round of qualifiers despite a disappointing 1-0 defeat to West African rivals Ghana in Accra on Sunday. In Nairobi, Kenya recorded heavy double triumphs after thrashing host South Sudan 7-1 and progressed to the second round on a 15-1 goal aggregate on Saturday. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.